I was asked to talk about Harbotas Torah and Avodas Hashem, which in a excellent translation is a leadership, direct translation, is a leadership training seminar. And so I figured before we get to some of the ideas that I wanted to share with you, maybe to sing a little bit, and then Bezer Hashem develop a couple of ideas. And then afterwards, if the Talmid want to ask any questions or discuss, it'll be really, really my pleasure. Yes, if you want to start again. Shema
Saying
Sometimes the Rebbe's Yesodos were also Yesodos that were beautiful Yesodos in Iyun as well. It's a combination, a confluence between both Chassidus and Iyun. The Birchas HaMitzvah of the Kohanim by Nesias Kapayim is Asher Kitshonu B'mitzvayis HaVitzivonu Levarech Esamo Yisrael Be'ahava. The bracha is not Levarech es Amo Yisrael, but there's one more word. It's Be'ava. It's with love. Now that has halachic implications. The halacha is that if there's a Kohen that's upset at someone in the Tzibur, he can't go up. Because the Birchas Kohanim, and the Rebbe develops the essence of Aaron HaKohen, is not only Levarech Esamo Yisrael, but it has to be Be'ava. It's a precondition to Nesias Kapayim. The Kohen can't go up. Aaron HaKohen is known, his whole Mahus was Oyev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom. There's an amazing halacha. In Seder Taharos. The halacha in Meseches Negoim, it's a Mishnah Negoim. The Rebbe pointed out. This yesod applies itself in such a very powerful way. And this yesod, I think, is at the core of looking at such special Talmidim growing, thinking about becoming leaders in Klal Yisrael, thinking about becoming Mechanchim. The Mishnah Negoim says that when there is a shaila on a house, if it's Tameh, or if an individual, we're not sure if he has Tumas Tsaras, so of course he goes and he asks a shaila. Am I Tameh? Is my house Tameh? The Mishnah says, there's a big Rav, he knows Taharos. He knows it backwards and forwards, he knows what's Tameh, what's Tar. When the individual comes in and asks him the Shaila, he cannot paskin. It has to be a Kohen. And then the Mishnah describes almost the absurd. It describes that there is a Chacham who knows Taharos, and there is a Kohen Amoretz. So the Shaila has to go to the Kohen. So the individual who comes to the Kohen goes and he shows the Kohen the Negat Saras. The Kohen goes and he asks the Chacham Yisrael. And then the Chacham Yisrael tells the Kohen, Tameh! The individual is not Tameh yet. He's only Tameh when the Kohen pronounces him Tameh. Why? At the end of the day, it almost seems to be a joke. Everybody knows that the Yediyas HaTeira came from the Chacham Yisrael. And the answer is that when you're giving a psak on Negoim, there the psak of Negoim, Nega Tzaras, is indicative of an individual who did an Avera. And the only person that's capable of giving hadracha, of being mechanech, of being a mashpia, is that the base relationship has to be clear that it's one of ava. If it's not clear that the relationship is based on ava, there's yediya, but there is no yachas, there is no chibur, there is no connection that's necessary to create the necessary message. And there are times, as mechanchim, and as counselors and as leaders, that we have to give tochacha as well. Hence, the essence of Aaron HaKohen is passed down to all the Kohanim, and that message of Kuhuna is not only to Kohen himself, Yoru Mishpatecha LeYaakov, anybody who takes up the mantle of desiring to teach, that is someone who Lo Rak Shevet Levi Bilvad, the Rambam describes, Elamishan Kol Mishan Odav Libo. But it's not enough. And my Talmidim know how much I love learning bi'iyun. But that's not enough. There has to be a clear sense between a father and a son, a Rebbe and a Talmud, that the relationship, the Briach HaTichon, is that relationship of Ahava. And if that's not there, there can't be a Psak of Tumah. There can't be a Hadracha. Yofa L'misha Omra. I have to admit, I'm not a chassid of Lubavitch, and I'm not a chassid of Reb Shlomo Kalbach. I love Reb Shlomo Kalbach, Zichron of Rochas Negunim. But I wouldn't say that Reb Avram Willig, who I'm friendly with, told me that he once sang every single stanza of the Chododi with a different one of Reb Shlomo's Negunim. I'm not a mumche. But I did hear Reb Shlomo's Hesped for Lubavitcher Rebbe Zichron Levracha. And he told an amazing story. He said that Reb Shlomo took upon himself that when he would go on the train, there was a time that Reb Shlomo Kalbach was someone who worked, he was one of the Rebbe's right-hand men. After he left Lakewood, where on Matzoy Shabbos, Reb Shlomo used to sing, Reb Aaron used to cry, Reb Aaron Zatzal used to cry. He left Lakewood, he went to Lubavitch. Reb Shlomo said that when he would worked for the Rebbe for those summers in the, it's probably the mid-60s. He said he used to stay in 770 until about 2, 3 in the morning. Many times he wasn't able to go home. He would sleep in his car. Sometimes he would actually take a train home and would sleep in his bed in the Upper West Side. He got home at about 3:30, and then he was back in Lubavitch at 10 o'clock. So he said that he took a Kabbalah, Bli Nether, upon himself, that when he goes into a train car, no matter what, this was classic Reb Shlomo, he would go into the train car. If there was anybody there, whoever it was, he would automatically strike up a conversation. He said he got into the train at 3 in the morning going from Brooklyn to Manhattan, and he said, to tell you the truth, he said, I was wishing there was no one there in the car. But sure enough, there's one guy that's sitting there in the car at 3 in the morning heading from Crown Heights, and he goes over to him, he strikes up a conversation with him. He asks the fellow, what's his name? Fictional name. Let's say his name is David Bernstein. Begins to schmooze and he realizes he's Jewish, and he sees him, he's in great mood. Rav Shlomo Zichrono Livracha asks him, he says, you seem really happy. He says to him, yeah, I am, I just got engaged. So Rav Shlomo, Kedarko the Kodesh, jumps up in the middle of the train car at 3 in the morning, a rikud on the way to Manhattan, and he's dancing with this guy. He's dancing with the fellow. They sit down after the Rikud, and he asks him, tell me, what's the name of your bride? He's clearly not a religious boy. He says, Susie O'Donnell. Rav Shlomo doesn't blink an eyelash. This is a Spechina Levarech HaSama Yisrael Ba'av. It doesn't blink an eyelash. And he says, you know, we, Lubavitcher Chassidim, we have a custom that before we get married, we go to the Rebbe for a bracha. He says, I have an idea. You're so happily engaged, you're getting married. Why don't we go to my grand rabbi for a blessing? He says, they turn over. In other words, they get off the train, cross the platform, back to Crown Heights. It's now 3:30 in the morning. They're heading back to Crown Heights for the Rebbe for a bracha. Rebbe's still in his study. They arrived. The Rebbe's still in his study. It's about 4 in the morning. Now you know why the Lubavitcher Chassidim daven late. Because the Rebbe used to be in Avodas HaKodesh working with his Chassidim until, that's the real reason Linnaeus died. It was 4 in the morning. About 4 in the morning, he comes into the, knocks on the Rebbe's study. He said, he stuck his head into the Rebbe, and he said to him in Yiddish in one sentence, this Bachur is about to marry a Goya, and I'm giving over to the Rebbe to discuss. Rav Shlomo said he sat outside from 4 in the morning until 7. The door was closed. It was just the Rebbe Zichrono Livracha and this fellow David. He said, I don't know what happened in the interim. So at 7 in the morning, the office door opened. The Rebbe came out, and David came out. And his face was full of tears, stained with tears. And he said, David today is a well-known, very special Lubavitcher Shliach. Rabosa, Yofa Lemisha Omra. If a person has created, cultivated a relationship, not only directly one-on-one, this was something that Reb Shlomo was inspired by from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that somehow the Rebbe had the ability to be able to create and convey that sense of Avas Yisrael that had that ripple effect to the point that 4 in the morning, when David's defenses were down, when he sensed that he was surrounded by people that really care about him and really love him, so then the Hashpa came through. The first step, I was asked by Rabbi Froelich, who I had the schus to work with in YU, here in Eretz Yisrael. Talmidim asked, how do we teach Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? And we could talk about in question and answers the details about how to teach Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. But Linnaeus Daiti, for sure the sugyas, again, my Talmidim know how much I love the sugyas. For sure the sugyas are important, and for sure the chakiras are important. And for sure, reading, learning how to really read a text is important. But the key, and I always say that I think that the most important part of my life that I learned of becoming a Rebbe was when I was a Madrich. And the more love you give your, what do you call them, your kids? Your NCSY? No, that's not good enough. No, they're your kids. Not your NCSY. They're your kids. The more love you give your campers, the more love, they're not just Tama label NCSYers. The more love you give your kids, the more love you give your campers, then ultimately that is what they reflect to others. That's the Yisoid. That's the Yisoid in Avodas Hashem. We'll be ma'arich a little bit more. Yeah. When it comes to actualizing, Lani is dying, the Aaron HaKohen is the model.
And I think, you know, also thinking about when you're in yeshiva, when you're in YU, I think that that's something that is sometimes there's a focus in terms of the grades, and realize that the grade that you get in shiur is less important than your ability to be able to access those special relationships that you have with those special rabbeim, to be able to access the Torah that you've learned, to be able to apply. And that's the real challenge. That's the real challenge. Yeah.
Here in Kol, we all want to get a lot of relationships with the kids here, and we all want to bring them closer to Judaism and all that. But how do we ensure our own personal growth in while trying to spend all of our time with the kids?
Ramesha Feinstein has a beautiful shula where Ramesha describes that just like there's a notion of a person spending a tenth of his money, a requirement that a person give nicer of his money to tzedakah, so too Ramesha says there's also a requirement for a person to give a tenth of his time. When I was in Hask, I used to have boys that were, there was a time that I was both a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, and boys were going back to the States, and they weren't sure whether they should learn in Kollel or whether they should go to Hask. I'm taking sides over here. But one of the things I told them was the following, that when it comes to breaking apart your year, a summer happens to be about a tenth. Depends on how large a summer is, but it's be'eret, a tenth of the year. And therefore, if a person devotes his summers, if the other part of his year is devoted to his own personal growth, even if this summer the focus is not your own growth, by the way, you should be doing chazar and so on and so forth, then it's entirely consistent with what Ramesha describes. I've never seen, to put in very succinct, practical terms, I've never seen a Talmud who gave his summer giving to others. By the way, Ramosha's tshuva is more applicable to NCSY than it is to Hatz, because he's talking about teaching Torah. It's a little bit of a stretch for Chesed. You know, you have to yesh lodun. I thought it could apply even to Hatz as well, assuming that the environment is a kosher and appropriate environment. So, I've never seen a Talmud who's devoted his time giving to others in the summer fall behind in their growth and learning. I've never encountered. So just because you, I think here they also do an amazing job of trying to be able to do both. You know, you have Rosh Yeshiva to learn from, you have great opportunities to continue growing on your own. But if your focus is going to be just to do chazar on what you did this year and throw your energies into the younger Talmidim, you won't lose a step. I've never seen anybody lose a step. Do you guys like to sing better than they like to dance? Yeah?
I'm either up to it or if I'm too tired to handle next year. How do I ensure that my Habusa, who's younger than me, is definitely influenced more, is not like influenced by my anything, by my movement?
In other words, you're having a down day, and he knows you should be doing night seder?
It's a Habusa.
You have a Habusa? And from the perspective of the head staff, it's okay for you to take the night off. And you're just concerned about that
it's every night it's a requirement.
It's a requirement. Okay. So I think this is not a shaila in Yoredeya and Hilchos Talmud Torah. I think it's a shaila in Hilchos Choshen Mishpat. In other words, you have a responsibility to camp. In other words, you signed up for that responsibility, and therefore, leaving aside whether Hilchos Melamdim, whether as a Melamed it's appropriate or not. By the way, as far as a Melamed is concerned, it's a totally different approach. But let's first deal with the Choshen Mishpat part. Your responsibility as someone who's working there, there's an understanding, whatever the contractual relationship there's an understanding that you have certain things that you're achray to do. So in terms of Choshen Mishpat, you would probably be responsible even though you're not in the mood. Now, going to the other side, in terms of Hilchos Melamdim, so here, the picture entirely changes, in my opinion. I find that in general,
a malame that shows weakness within borders, obviously severe weaknesses is a bad role model, but a malame who shows his humanity to his students, their students grow from it. I remember in the summers when I used to go visit Rav Schechter in Tannersville, I think one of the things that we love about being with Rav Schechter in the summer is that he's so normal. That he's so normal. That's one of the things that allow us to be mushpat, to be influenced by him. So the fact that you are tired and exhausted, that's normal. And therefore, if considering the parameters of the camp are taken care of, as a chavrusa to say, you know, I'm really, really tired, then that's okay. That's okay. It's important for him to see that his role model is also struggles with things that are human and that he's not perfect. Obviously, within a certain contours and certain boundaries. But I think showing humanity to your campers, to your ancestors, wires is only something that they're gonna grow from. So to say I'm tired, I'm exhausted, that will make him feel, you know, okay. So I realize that there are times that he's not able to, but tomorrow, the next day, I see that he doesn't give up. You know, the greatest challenge of this generation, many Bali Machshava said, is the challenge of Yeyush, is the challenge of someone giving up. So that you show him that tonight you're not on your game, but that tomorrow you're going to try to make up a little bit that you missed the day before, that's a greater chinuch lesson than pushing yourself through. I think you've taught him more that way by missing that night and continuing the next night in terms of Hilchos Malam, as far as that's concerned. Yeah, what's your name?
Stanley
Schultz. Nice to meet you. I like the accent.
What accent?
Oh, it sounds like a British accent, okay. No. Go ahead.
In terms of an allocation of time, everything is more important to...
It's not a New York accent, though.
No, Los Angeles.
I said that as a real New Yorker. Go ahead.
So it's everything in terms of allocating time. Is it more important to allocate a significant portion of time to 5, 10, 15, 20 guys, or try to spread out a little bit more? Meaning, if you can...
5, 10, 15, 20 guys sounds like that. Sounds like a nice group.
Meaning,
no, seriously.
Whatever the number is, I'm saying if you can spend a significant portion of time trying to affect a smaller group of guys or trying to spend maybe less time with a larger group of guys.
I think this gets back to something that we spoke about when the lights were off and something that we alluded to about the different kohos in every single person. A great anecdote. I was telling guys one anecdote about Rabbi Branchville and Rabbi Schechter before. There's a legend that I heard when I was a Talmud. I learned in Rabbi Schechter's cult, but for many years I was in Rabbi Branchville's shul. Unfortunately, he requires a yeshua. He now suffers from Alzheimer's. And they were roommates. Legend has it, when I was a Talmud, they used to say that Rabbi Branchville, Talmudim had heard him say that when Rabbi Branchville would say that when he was falling asleep, Rabbi Schechter was learning the Masechtos that no one learns. And Rabbi Schechter said that when I was falling asleep, Rabbi Branchville was saying to him. That's how the Talmudim used to say it. Each one of them said they went to sleep. The other one said the other one was still up. Rabbi Branchville was saying to him, Rabbi Schechter was saying. Now, Rabbosai, what would have happened, just to create the picture, what would have happened if Rabbi Schechter was on the top bunk bed looking down at Rabbi Branchville and said, wow, look at such an Ovid Hashem. He's saying to him, you know what? Let me close the Gemara. I haven't really said Tilim today. I've learned many daf from the Gemara. I haven't said Tilim today. And he would have opened up the Tilim. And Rabbi Branchville would have looked up on the bunk bed and he would have said, look at this. Herschel's doing, that's what he used to call him when he would speak to me, Herschel's doing all of these daf. I didn't learn Krisis. I didn't learn Erechin. I didn't. Then the world wouldn't have had Rabbi Schechter v'Gadlusa, and the world wouldn't have had Rabbi Branchville. A question like that, at its core, is really something that relates to individuals, both his kohos, his particular strengths, as well as his shifas, his aspirations. So, if you know that there's a group of five that you'll be able to really focus on and mold, but if you diffuse your strengths that you're not going to be able to be mashpia as well, 25 and 30, then it makes sense to be mashpia on the five. And there are some people who, if they would focus on those fives, they wouldn't do as well. I can think of certain Rosh Yeshiva who, when they speak to a crowd of 50, 70, they're fantastic. And on three or four, they're not as able to mold those three or four guys, and vice versa. So this very much relates to a person's kofos, as well as the programming. As well as the programming. In other words, there are times that the camp will want you to focus your efforts on one group and other instances on another group. Yeah?
How do you build self-confidence in a case?
It's a great question, and such an important question in our generation. We said that Yeush is one of the big challenges that exists today, where a person gives up. And one of the main reasons that Yeush sets in is in terms of bitachon atzmi, confidence, self-confidence. I'll tell you what I think. This is not Torah Misina. I can't quote an anecdote from my Rabbeim. I'll just tell you my personal sense. I think that in general, Talmidim aren't built up as much as they could be. In other words, I don't know if this applies as much in your learning groups, but if you have a shiur in a high school where there are 20, 25 guys, how often does the Rebbe really show the Talmud, that what he's done is something that's special and show him the progress that he's made based on his madriga where he's at? The moment in which a person feels that I've been successful at something, then they can move on to something else. The only way that confidence is really built is when a person says, wait a second, what I thought that I couldn't do, I could really do. What often happens, I wonder about this Talmud that I was talking about, who was a Borsid Shainim Havetipa. I don't know if he really knew how special he was. I knew it, as his friend, how special he was, but I don't know if he knew how special he was. Do your campers, do your NCSYers, do your kids, do they really, really know how special they are? And every neshama is so special and so dear. And in terms of growth and learning and in Avodas Hashem, there are actual steps, right? Mesilas Yesharim has steps. There's a process. Growth and learning has steps. To really, really show the Talmidim they've gone from step to step. By the way, that's a tremendous challenge we have in Yeshiva University. That's a tremendous challenge every yeshiva has. How do you go and help every Talmud to the point that each one, whether he's in a shir of five guys or he's in a shir of 100 guys, that he feels that he's growing step by step by step by step. And confidence comes from that. Confidence comes from that. Confidence comes from the sense of, wait a second, I thought I would never be able to go from Zahirus to Zrizus. I didn't think I'd be able to go from that. I never thought that I'd be able to read a Tosis on my own. But what if nobody noticed that you read the Tosis on your own? What if you didn't have that sense of accomplishment to really realize that you're at that point, that you're ready to go to that next step? So that's very, very hard. And I think in our generation, that's a function also of our success. Once upon a time, 1944 yearbook, how many boys graduated from Yeshiva University? Weren't many. I think there's about 35, 40 guys. We don't know how many are now every year. And that challenge, and therefore, when there were 35 and 40 guys, at that stage, Rav Soloveitchik knew everybody's name in the shir. He knew everybody in the shir. Baruch Hashem, years later, the shir grew and so on. And that challenge applies not only Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, it applies in Yeshivas Mir Yerushalayim, it applies in Yeshiva Tarvadas, it applies in all your great yeshivas throughout the world. And the reason why that challenge is so poignant today is Baruch Hashem, we've rebuilt. We've rebuilt. Klal Yisrael has rebuilt. But along the way, there are many children that aren't, and many beautiful neshamos that aren't given that sense of self-confidence to be able to feel that they're going to Yishlach L'Shach. And I think that's a tremendous, tremendous challenge that we have. And that's why your role is so important. Because you can't expect the YU Rosh Yeshiva to be able to notice every single guy. It's not realistic. But that means that what Rav Miller discussed once upon a time,
time, the idea of having Sarei Alofim, Sarei Asaro, Sarei Meya, that each one of you, when you go back to New York, each one of you have to be at least a Sarei Asara, if not a Sarei Meya. That each one of you have your 10 guys that you're really, really saying, wait a second, I'm watching their growth. I'm going to ask them if they're going from Chumash to Gemara, do they feel that they're being successful? And I'm going to try to sit down with them and give them that sense of confidence. And that's invaluable. That's something that, at the end of the day, Lania's deity, there's much more Gan Eden for that, for what I described my wife's grandfather did, than there is for those names that are world famous. Yeah, what's your name? From what?
Weber.
Okay.
In the story you heard before, that moment when Rav Shlomo showed concern for each Jew.
Right.
There was also a considerable amount of deceit in that moment. Like, I would never have agreed to a 3-hour session in which a rabbi was going to convince him to write about his engagement.
Okay.
The question is how much.
Okay, it's not an agreement with that same. But go, continue.
Right.
Okay.
How much does that level of either deceit or misrepresentation play a role when we say come here for 5 minutes and we leave, I'm going to keep you there longer.
It's a great parallel.
Going to Kinderet is funny when maybe sense of humor is not great, but once you go, you'll enjoy the sheer. How much does that play a role when we educate? I mean, is it something we should engage in every once in a while?
So first of all, I didn't notice in that, so when Rav Shlomo said that story, I didn't notice that there was deceit involved. I think that Rav Shlomo really felt that a bracha from the Rebbe would be really, really helpful. I don't think Rav Shlomo knew how the story was going to end when he brought him to the Rebbe. Your question is still a very valid question, nevertheless. But I think Rav Shlomo in that story was sincere. He was grasping to do anything that he can, and in his Avas Yisrael, what he and the Rebbe created was something that's very special. But your question is a great question, nevertheless, in terms of what happens if you want to get the Talmud into something, and yet you know that if you're going to address it head on, so then he's less open, and what you're going to do is you're going to try to get a hope. Let me amplify how important your question is. I heard this from Rav Schefter. Actually, I just reviewed it in the Daf Yomi. The Marshal in Bava Kamma, Daf Lamed Zayin Lamed Ches, asks the following question. Gemara describes that there were two Romans that came to learn Torah by the Chachamim, and they said, everything is beautiful, everything's MS, except the Mishnah over there on the top of the Yomid, Lamed Zayin Lamed Aleph, says that a Shor Shenagat Yisrael, that's a Shor Akum, has to pay, but a Shor Yisrael Shenagat Akum does not have to pay. So they said that everything in the Torah is beautiful, but that doesn't make sense. By the way, the Gemara answers the question, not in a prejudicial way. The Gemara gives an explanation over there. The Chachamim, at that particular time, didn't give the answer that the Gemara gives, and they taught them the halacha. And the Marshal asks, wait a second, this is during the time of Roman persecution, and there are Jewish lives that are at stake. So they should have lied. So Marshal says an amazing chiddush. The Marshal says that ziyuf haTorah is asur to the point that you're not allowed to lie even if you know that Jewish lives are going to be in danger. Which actually, of course, then begs the question. Yehari Kvali Yavah, we know there's big three. The Marshal writes that right there on the dot. That I heard. I didn't know it. I heard it from Rishefta when he came, when Josh brought him to the Tivari. Rishefta went on to explain that the rationale behind it is that Torah is the shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Torah is the essence of God. So when you're falsifying Torah, if you falsify Torah, then you're falsifying the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is an extension of some form of Avodah Zarah. So what we're doing is we're playing with fire, as you're pointing out. If it reaches the point that it's ziyuf haTorah, then in such a case, not only is it wrong, not only is it sheker, A. B. There's no question that in our generation today, particularly as well in the religious world, the nekudas ha-emes,
the emphasis of being truthful and honest and straight people, emes nitarderet, emes is continues to go to sink. And once upon a time, someone who was a religious Jew was an embodiment of an Yeshemes, which is what Torah is all about. What are we doing being amal neves medrashim, not for searching for emes, in a world that's entirely full of relativism? That's what learning the Beis Medrash is all about. It's a search for emes. So that's another reason why your question is so important. That we have to embody that which is emes. Mechil Hashem. I believe that the Chil Hashem, when someone who is caught, who is a religious Jew, who is caught in being involved in dishonest behavior, is a greater Chil Hashem than when there's a religious Jew that's involved in sexual averus. And the reason for that is because sexual averus, as terrible as they are, but at the end of the day, that individual, everybody understands that there's a strong Yetzer Hara for it. But and Arayah is antithetical to Torah. But when you have someone who is supposed to embody what is emes and acts in the exact opposite manner, Lamia's diet to the Hashem might even be greater. But in your case, I think it's okay. And the reason why I think it's okay is because the word that I would use if I could get my marketing terms correct, is use the hook. There's a hook over here. It's not deceitful. If you tell the guy that, I think it's pretty silly to tell that the rabbi has a sense of humor if he really doesn't. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's going to become obvious that what he was saying wasn't accurate. But if you're trying to hook him into a shir, if you're trying to hook him to look at a particular website, in other words, a website that will be mashpia nim latov, forest of danger. To be mashpia on him latov, then I think at the end of the day, it really depends on how you present it. If you present it in a way that's compromising, then it's a problem. But if you're saying to the Talmud, you know what, there's going to be great pizza there, so then that's done all the time. Aside from the fact, we could elaborate another time on mitosh lo lishma bo lishma. But no question, but what you're driving at is extremely, extremely important, and that the Nekudas HaEmes has to be something that is embodied by Malandrin. It's one of the most important problems that could possibly exist. And I think sometimes you're right, people compromise that.
I want to thank Rabbi Eisenstein. The hour is late for him, and it was very, very important in Yanin, and extremely valuable for all of us. I invite Rabbi Eisenstein back to join us in the Beis Medrash to see in action the things that we spoke about tonight. Hopefully he'll take us up on that. Then.